Sources on 2FM.
Thanks for the deep dive for Friday, the 2nd of September, and this is Game On. Coming up today, it's another busy Friday between now and 7 o'clock. On the way, we have GAA News with Damien Lawler, US Open Tennis with Gary Cahill, Jane Mangan on racing, plus a feast of football to discuss with Mary Curtin, Fergal Brennan and Alan Cawley, including this.
So Ireland with its free kick, about 10 metres inside the finish half, and Lily Agan's got her head to it. Keeper and Kate Carpella are in the back of the net, and Ireland have caught a break here at Tallaght Stadium, and they lead by a goal to nil. Free kick, and it's headed in. 1-0 Ireland. Lily Ag arriving on the scene, beating the keeper to it, and it's Ireland 1, Finland 0.
One for the history books for sure. Well, if you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game On on 2FM.
Alan Hawley is with me in studio. Welcome along, Alan. Damien Lawler is with me on the line as well. Damien, we do have some GAA news to get into, but before we do that, yourself and Alan were both in Tallaght last night. Did you enjoy it, Damien?
I did, Marie. Really did, yeah. I would have been, night would have been better if I met Alan.
Thanks a million, Damien.
Yeah, it was great. The slow start of the game, I thought, and then really, really good from maybe the the second half of the first half onwards, I thought Ireland were really good, and they had a good shape. Thought they looked maybe a little bit out of ideas in the first quarter, but after that, you know, and Finland were technically good, I thought, but really enjoyed the game. My daughter Chloe loved the game as well. We've been at a few of them, obviously, this one thanks to yourself, Marie, but the biggest crowd there last night. Really enjoyed it, and great team performance. They defended brilliantly as well.
There were some empty seats, and that was disappointing, but everyone who was there wanted to be there, and they made their presence felt. It sounded like it anyway.
Definitely, and like I just felt that actually at the very, very start, like a lot of people were coming in late to take their seats, or they were looking for specific seats, or anyway, that seems to maybe affect the atmosphere in the first 10 minutes. But look, a big enough crowd, there were some empty seats there for sure, big enough crowd, really enjoyed it, and then listened to the radio coverage on the way home trying to work out the permutations of a potential playoff. So I just took two Nurofen when I came back after listening to that. But no, really, I actually said to my daughter straight away, you can see the impact that Lily Ag made straight away. She was spraying balls all over the centre of the park, and the bravery she showed for the header, really, really impressive player to me, and I'm delighted she got player of the match because I think she deserves it.
Yeah, she did. Alan, just overall thoughts on the performance?
It was similar to what Damien was saying there. I thought the first half they looked a little bit nervy and jittery, which might have been expected because of, I suppose, how important the occasion was and what was at stake. Absolutely. But I agree, once Lily Ag came on, she showed a level of composure that was probably missing in that early part of the first half. She got on the ball and we finished strongly towards the end of the first half. The second half was a lot more even, and we came out and had a go and obviously got the goal as well. And once we had the goal, I always felt we were in a position where obviously they were well structured and well set up anyway, and tough to break down despite Finland having a lot of the ball, that it always looked like we were going to hold out once they managed the game well, and I think they did. And that's been, I suppose, I've covered this team now over the last 2 or 3 years and seen the growth and the development in the Marie, no more than yourself. And I think that experience showed, even if you think towards the last 5 or 6 minutes, where you see Denise O'Sullivan and Katie McCabe holding the ball in the corner as well. So it just goes to show, as I say, the experience that they've gained over the years, and bringing it through to the games as well at such a high level also. And after coming off the Women's Euros, which we obviously covered, which was fantastic, it's brilliant now that we can kind of pick up off the back of that as well, put themselves in a position that would have been the goal at the start of the campaign, obviously, to finish second, the most realistic place to finish behind Sweden, and put themselves in a position now where we have a realistic chance of qualification to get to that major tournament. Because I think once we qualify for a major tournament, I said it here before, it'll be Italia 90 all over again for the women's game, which will be absolutely fantastic.
Yeah,
it'd be great. So we'll all be heading down to New Zealand then. All go to Japan. Damien, the GAA season I think will be over by then as well, because it's finished so early. So
would you bet on it, Marie?
Well, you could bring Chloe down maybe if you get it in the books nice and early. Let's move on to GAA news though, and unfortunately the news in Roscommon about the referee and the incident there has dominated headlines for the last few days, and rightly so, because I think everybody at this stage now has seen that footage and is very well aware of what has happened. The story has moved on today though, Damien, and it's going to be a situation in Roscommon now where the games are going to be postponed because of this alleged assault on the match official.
Yeah, Marie, I suppose most of the country is aware of the alleged assault that took place, that allegedly took place in midweek, a minor football game between St. Aidan's and St. Dominic's, and that was held in Ballyforn on Wednesday evening. And I think the video footage of that was in wide circulation from that evening onwards. But I think up to late last night and stretching even into the early hours of this morning, members of the Roscommon County Board executives were speaking to referees representatives, and it emerged that the referees were not making themselves available to cover all GAA games in the county this weekend, from Friday right through to Saturday, right through to Sunday at midnight. And that was kind of the angle that we had this morning once we got that confirmed and fleshed out. From there, though, it changed quickly because we were soon led to believe that there was still hope that the games may take place, that members of the county board were making one final effort to contact the referee representatives again and to maybe open up the channels of communication once more. I got that correspondence from a club that were fed that information through the county board. So certainly there was hope that maybe all was not lost yet in terms of fulfilling the weekend's fixtures. However, mid-afternoon, it then emerged or re-emerged that the referees were, in fact, and had confirmed that they would not be available to cover the games tonight, Saturday and Sunday. The games were instead going to be played on the weekend starting September the 16th. And Roscommon GAA once more took the decision or the opportunity to come out and condemn any use of anything extreme or over the top in regards to their match officials. That was followed up quite quickly then by a statement from Roscommon Camogie, and effectively to the end that there will be no Camogie matches in Roscommon this weekend either. It remains to be seen what the LGFA and Roscommon decide to do, but there's an expectation that it could be similar there as well. So quite significant, Marie. A wide number of games across all codes nearly that will not take place this weekend. They will go ahead instead for men's football and hurling. They will go ahead the weekend starting September 16th, and the Camogie games will be played at a later date. And that maybe just highlights the seriousness of the alleged event that took place midweek.
It must be a huge concern to the powers that be in GAHQ because not a season goes by when there isn't an incident, and probably we're only seeing them now because of COVID and games are being streamed. So we're actually starting to see a lot more footage of things that are happening on the pitch. And anecdotally, and I'm sure you're the same, like, referees are so hard to come by anyway, even for kids' games, for friendlies, for everything really, and it's across other sports too. But what are the GAA going to do, Damien, to try and fix this problem, because they haven't been able to do it yet?
Okay, so speaking at a general level about the incidents in general, I was chatting to Willie Barrett, former referees committee chairman today, and he was just calling for very, very serious action to be taken going forward. And he was, making the point that any, kind of extreme behaviour towards a referee, and, we won't get into the definitions of it, but in general, they need to be dealt with, with the full rigours of the law. And, Willie was calling for a full-time recruitment officer to be installed in each of the provinces, because this comes at a time whereby counties are struggling to fulfil refereeing positions in many, many places. The recruitment process is in big, big trouble. Social media abuse of referees is out there. Yourself, both Alan and Marie, from being on sidelines, the level of abuse that's hurled at referees through parents, coaches and players at all levels and grades of the sports. And certainly in GAA, I get the feeling on this one that this alleged event could be a turning point, it could be a defining moment, and it could be maybe a line in the sand, because I think the fact that the referees are refusing to participate in matches this weekend is a major, major statement. And I do feel that the whole culture needs to change, right from the grassroots up. You look at the rugby scenario whereby players treat referees and match officials with respect from juvenile levels upwards, and it's not tolerated if they don't. And rarely do you see any incidents in that sport. And it's accepted, whatever the referee decides, the technology has been brought in at a top, top level. In GAA and in other sports, that same culture does not exist. And I think that it has to change, and it probably has to start from grassroots levels upwards. But certainly I feel that you know, we're led to believe that maybe just a Garda investigation going on into the current case in Roscommon, and certainly anecdotally there's been discussed all over the country, like just about what allegedly took place, and even just to see the video footage of the referee on the ground, even that side alone, no matter if anything did happen, that's very, very worrying and very, very troubling. So I definitely do get the sense that this could be a huge moment in the shift of respect towards referees, because quite simply, Marie, Willie Barra was making the point that if stuff like what allegedly happened midweek continues, there'll be a drastic shortage of referees going forward and games won't be played. Yeah. And unfortunately, you hit people hardest when games are not played. And we saw that during COVID. And if there's a shortage of match officials, everybody suffers then.
Maybe this, in a way, having the been highlighted on social media is going to turn out to be a good thing as well, because it has gone viral and everybody's talking about it and aware of it and really disgusted by it. And it's quite obvious now that there are going to be consequences for the actions of this person and consequences as well that have a knock-on effect on games. So we're actually starting to understand how big a problem this is, because we're seeing it. You know, we didn't see it for so long.
Definitely. I mean, social media, like, is toxic in many, many places. It's toxic at the best of times for a lot of people. If you're anywhere in the public eye at all you're fair game for it. But, there, you know, certainly for strategy in business and corporate levels, you can see how companies thrive by using social media. And in sport, it can bring you some very, very warm personal moments too. And it can capture moments like the alleged events of last week or midweek, whereby you can actually lay eyes on the referee lying down on the ground. And that has a profound impact rather than just hearing about it.
Yeah.
And I think that circulated the country pretty quickly. And as I say, I'm not just saying this, but I just feel there's a cut-off point with this one. I mean, I just don't think he can be allowed to continue the way it has. And look, there have been ad hoc events like the ones that allegedly took place. They've been ad hoc and they've been sporadic and they haven't been regular, but all too regular, you know, for the little amount that does happen. And it paints everybody in a bad light. Teams, coaches, players, the association, and it won't be taken lightly, this one, I don't think.
Yeah, Al, it's a problem that's not exclusive to the GAA either. It is very much prevalent in soccer too.
Absolutely, yeah. And there's no point in me kind of shying away from that, Marie. It's absolutely a problem at grassroots level in football as well. But I would agree totally with Damien that a stand has to be taken at some point. I often find with conversations like this, they're in the public domain for maybe a day or two, and we have these strong conversations, but the lack of action is what really annoys me. But I would agree totally with what the stand the referees have taken here. And even if it meant to take it into the following week, and I know people will suffer at that, but there comes a point where I know if I was a referee and a colleague of mine was kind of involved in an incident that allegedly took place, you'd have to back up the referees. And I think the referees, kind of powers that be involved in Roscommon and across the country, have to back the referees massively on this as well, Marie, because without the referees, there'd be no games. And that's all people want is the games.
Also, if they're doing that to, if things like that are happening to referees, like we also have seen as well that they're happening to, like there's fights amongst players, crowds are getting involved. It's a whole cultural thing that needs to shift.
And that's the point. And I don't want to make this about the soccer and the GAA, and because I love the GAA as well, Marie, and I was brought up playing Gaelic football as well. So, and you're right, it is involved in soccer and all sorts. But the incidents we see in Croke Park with the players at that level, and obviously the brawl and that major incident,
the tunnels and all that stuff.
Like, I definitely feel that has a knock on effect, because as long as I've been involved in sport and particularly kind of the little bits with GAA, there's an acceptance I find in that culture that these kind of incidents are tolerated, and I said they're spoken about for a day or two and then they're kicked down the road. So until that changes, Marie, I think you will have incidents kind of cropping up again. So hopefully this, as you say, there'll be a line drawn in the sand, there'll be serious consequences for whatever individual or whoever people are involved in incidents like this allegedly or whatever happens. So there has to be a line drawn at some point, because you can't carry on, and we all love sport in this country, everybody, but you can't carry on a situation where referees are going out on a pitch feeling in fear of some incident happening.
Damien, I know you're up against it time wise, but quickly before we let you go, I'm always doing this to you. Oisín McConville possibly taking up the role as the Wicklow football manager?
Yeah. I think it's definitely stronger than possibly. I think he's going to take it, Marie, and it's going to be probably confirmed maybe over the weekend. I didn't see it coming myself personally, but we got it confirmed online from the online desk. I got the story and it was confirmed mid-afternoon. Basically, Oisin, as we know, flying member of Armagh's team that won the All-Ireland, started the noughties, took Cross McGlen, two county titles up there, won an Ulster title with them, Marie. Is over DKIT at college level for the last couple of years, doing a bit of work in there, and has taken other clubs too. In recent years, would have been touted to be on the Mayo backroom ticket quite recently, but he's taken the Wicklow job. It's a huge, huge boost for them. I think they have a couple of announcements coming up, and it should be confirmed on Sunday, Marie. So that's a possibly another member of the RT analyst that will be on the sidelines come the 2023 season. Well, young Cawley could get a run in the Sunday game.
Do you know what?
I'm happy where I am.
That is the first time I heard him say I grew up playing Gaelic football, so maybe you're right.
Yeah, first time.
I'd have a go at it, I would.
Well, I say there's no doubt about it. And Marie, before I go, I had a good trip away with Alan many years ago. Alan was playing for Ireland under 16 in Israel, and I think one of your next guests, Gary Cahill, I had a decent trip away with Gary as well with the Youth Olympics in Murcia in Spain. So say hello to him for me if you don't mind as well.
Jeez, Damien, I don't know why you went on to that GA beat. It sounds like you were living your best life back then.
Yeah, that was about 20 years ago when I had a life, Marie.
He spent more time down the back of the bus with us instead of being up with his colleagues.
Yeah, that's why the powers that be didn't like me, Ellen. Yeah.
Oh, brilliant. Damien, thanks a million. And we'll talk to you next week. Have a good weekend.
See you guys.
QFM. Game on 2FM.
So Ireland with this free kick about 10 metres inside the finish half, and Lily Yang has got her head to it. Keeper came, Carpella, and it's in the back of the net, and Ireland have caught a break here at Tallaght Stadium, and they lead by a goal to nil. Free kick, and it's headed in 1-0 Ireland. Lily Yang arriving on the scene, beating the keeper to it, and it's Ireland 1 Finland 0.
Yeah, Lily Ag in the right place at the right time when we really needed her.
The only thing that disappointed me about that last night with the commentary, how did I not break into I do.
Well, you've done it now, Al, so we'll clip it up and you know we can add it to it.
There
and
you
we
go.
Can we can make it, because it'll be one of those ones that will be drawn on, I'd say, for years to come. Well, hopefully we will. Anyway, well, to reflect on last night's win over Finland, Mary Curtin joins us on the line, and Fergal Brennan as well. Mary, to you first. They made hard work of it, I think, is probably a good way to describe it.
Hi, Marie. Yeah, we did. Look, we got over the line in the end. I know there's a lot of talk of the first half in particular being tense. But, you know, we did have a really defensive approach to the game. Like, I was just looking at some of the position from McCabe and Zhu in particular. And, you know, it just, look, we had our structure, at least. We had, you know, our positioning down. They knew exactly, they had a very defensive approach. You know, they just slotted back very, very close to Rusha and Denise in the middle. So, yeah, like, I mean, I just look back at some of the game again today, and it probably wasn't as bad as I thought last night, and hearing a lot, you know, we obviously came into the game better in the second half. I do think Lily Ag made such a difference when she came on, with unfortunately Rusha going off injured. But, you know, it was a better second half for sure. We kind of gathered ourselves a bit more, but I feel, you know, defensively, we were all right, actually. And I think there's another level to this team, another level to this squad. And I'd like, you know, to set our sights on aggressively keeping possession. You know, I think that's where we're hopefully headed as a group.
Yeah, I think probably, Mary, as well, we as commentators and fans and journalists and all the rest probably didn't help ourselves by the build-up. We were a bit overexcited maybe by the team, and we thought it was going to be a little bit more attacking. We'd maybe written Finland off as well from watching them in the Euros, and you know, maybe didn't give them enough credit and put a little bit too much expectation on a team that were going into a cauldron with a lot of pressure too.
Yeah, like that's it. And, you know, you have to look at where the majority of the Irish players are playing in England. You know, we're off a summer break. A lot of the girls are just in pre-season. And you have to give credit to Finland, actually. Like, you know, they're after coming out of the Euros, okay, they didn't have the best Euros. They had a really, really tough group over there with Denmark, Spain and Germany. Like, what a group to come away from. But, like, they did look really fresh, you know, against us. And you have to give them that. They were organized. I was surprised that they gave up so many set pieces, frees and throws, given what they must know, you know, this, our strengths on the Irish team. Like Megan Campbell's throws are an absolute weapon, so we got plenty of sight of that. And you know, free kicks as well, you know, obviously Lily Agg's goal was an unbelievable cross from Megan Campbell. So yeah, I was surprised that they did give us, you know, sometimes it can't be helped in run of play, giving away set pieces, but we did well off set pieces. We looked very dangerous in those.
Fergal, look, we probably are getting a little bit carried away again after it, because, you know, it feels like we're there, but the reality is that we're not there yet. And Ruaidhrí Littlejohn actually tweeted that today and said she got a bit of a reality check. Like, you know, they're not in a World Cup. We're not in a World Cup. We still have a little bit more of a way to go to get there. And it's going to be complicated. And we all know from playoffs, from major tournaments, they're never straightforward. This isn't going to be straightforward. Oh, we have lost Fergal, so we'll come back to Fergal. I'll just making the point, look, we're not there yet. It was a great night last night. Again, it's one of those moments, and I think it's because this team has been on such a journey that you feel like you need to, and you're entitled and you should celebrate these wins.
Yeah, and I think that's fair, Marie, you know, because I said earlier on, even when we were speaking to Damien about it, just the fact that at the start of the campaign, the most realistic goal was finishing second place and getting a playoff. So that's the achievement. Mm-hmm. They've achieved their goal so far. Obviously, they want to get to the World Cup. Now they've put themselves in a position where they have the playoff position and they can obviously strive for that. So I think it's important that they celebrate last night, which we all seen the brilliant scenes mm-hmm. after the match last night. And that's 100% that they should do that. But now the focus turns to those playoffs and get back on kind of level ground again. And I'm sure Vera will be bringing them right back down to earth again today. And the girls themselves, but I think it's important that you celebrate the fact that you did finish second in the group. They went to Helsinki and beat Finland. They beat them at home last night. As Marie was saying there, we saw them obviously in the Euros in a tough group as well. So at the start of the group, we would have been the third seed. So they would have been fancied, Finland, to obviously come out of this group. So that's an achievement in itself, the fact that we finished second. That, as I say, the development and the growth in this group and what we've seen throughout the campaigns as well. So that's the achievement. But now all eyes turn to the convoluted system that is the playoff, but we'll cross that bridge when we come to it, Marie. But let them enjoy last night.
Yeah, and I think as well it's one of those games, Fergal, that they're going to learn a huge amount from it, because it didn't all go to plan from the start.
No, and that's sometimes the nature of international football. You do have to slightly roll with the punches a little bit, and particularly when it's a pressurised fixture and you've got your eyes on that position of going for the playoffs and looking to make a little bit of history. Now, obviously, the focus after the final qualifier next month will switch to the playoffs. And as Alan said, there's still a bit of road to be run. The playoffs are a fairly complicated system to get through. That's where the focus now switches. But international football sometimes can be so strange, and you do have to kind of let certain things go sometimes to get the results. And that was the case in the Finland game, and now the focus switches in the next few weeks and months, because there's going to be some huge games coming up.
Yeah, it feels like job done, and it isn't. And Mari, just look, I think we should probably have a word for Katie McCabe and Denise O'Sullivan, that picture of them at the end of the game, just hanging on to each other for dear life, because they know, and you know as well, Mari, and Katie actually mentioned all the players that have gone before her as well, and how they paved the way and set them up so that they could go out and try and achieve this dream, not just for themselves, but for everybody that's been involved in Irish women's football.
Yeah, just this, Marie, you said it, you know, Denise and Katie and Megan and Louise and Diane and, you know, there's a lot of players there, Ruaidhrí, a lot of players there who've been on a long road. And, you know, it's not just when internationals come around, you know, they live their life, they dedicate their lives to football. You know, it's everything, it's in every single thing that they do, it has to be part of their lifestyle. So, you know, it's a special moment, you know, to to get over the line yesterday, and we've been good at just getting over the line, and that's what's just hugely positive about this group. We've been getting there, even despite, you know, not the best performance. You know, and we know there's more to give, but hugely positive.
That's it.
And
they're
such a strong squad.
Yeah, and on that as well, Marie, because obviously we, and I was probably critical of them in the first half, and it was more so, it wasn't being critical of the team or the girls or Vera. It was more, I feel, having covered this team and I've watched them a lot over the last 2 or 3 years, and maybe years gone by, and Mary obviously would have played in games where they would have been very much the underdog, and you would have gone into games like that with a very pragmatic approach because you would have been playing against superior opposition and thinking, okay, we're best to just sit in and try and defend and hit teams on the counter-attack. I think this team has developed so much over the last 18 months to 2 years that we can afford now against Finland to come out and play and show our kind of style and impose ourselves on the game. So that was the thing. It wasn't so much a criticism of me thinking, oh, they're negative and defensive and they just want to be horrible to play against. I actually feel that they should give themselves a lot more credit in the sense that we're capable of Finland or another country of a similar stature coming to Tala and us imposing ourselves on them, because in the second half when we did that and when we get up and at them and in their faces and we sustain attacks from set pieces and stuff like that and start to create chances, that's when we're at our most dangerous. And I felt in the first half when we were sitting back playing into Finland's hands, it only takes a sloppy mistake or an error or something like that, you fall a goal down and all of a sudden you're chasing the game and the whole dynamic changes. So it's not so much a criticism of me thinking, oh, I don't think, what I'm trying to say is that I think we should believe that we're gone up to a level now that we're
capable. Our standards are
100%. Yeah. And I've watched the teams in the Euros, they're some of the lesser lights. We're every bit as good as any of those, you know?
Absolutely. Mara, we're going to let you go. Thank you so much for joining us, and we will be checking in with you over the next little while as we build up to those really important, or that, well, hopefully just one really important qualifier to come, but Ireland do have that game against Slovakia on Tuesday as well. Alan, I mentioned standards there and how they change, and the expectations are very, very different, and I think you could apply that to Manchester United 3 weeks ago to compare to now. The expectation and standards are very different, and we saw them in action against Leicester last night, and I don't know if you learned a huge amount from them, from it, from the game, but at least they're winning matches again.
Small building blocks, Marie, and I wouldn't get too carried away. I don't think anyone should. Obviously there's a text in there from Paul in Sligo asking about the hype. I don't really get that. I don't think there's a lot of hype around them. I think the fact that obviously they've won a couple of matches, the first time they went back to back, I think, after they beat Southampton since February, so to win three in a row now is obviously big for them, considering the fall from grace that they had, and obviously we saw the game against Brentford. So, but I do think it's small building blocks, and I think over a period of time we will see them gradually get better and better. As I said, I wouldn't be getting carried away. There's still a very much a long way to go, but I think the signing of Casemiro, Anthony, that'll all add to it. I think he's getting consistency. The one thing I always kind of sense with the really good teams is when they have consistency in their team selection and continuity throughout the group, and you see 8 or 9 out of the 11 playing every week, I always think that bodes well for the better teams. I hate to see teams making changes left, right and centre, because the manager then is second guessing his best 11. So I think we've seen that with the back four, that he's named the same back four in the last three games as well. So as I say, it's small building blocks, but it's nice to see them win a couple of matches, Maria, I must say.
Fergal, what about Harry Maguire? Do you think we're going to see him back again?
I think, as Alan said, the naming of the same back four in the last few games, that'll continue. There is obviously a question further down the line over Harry Maguire and also over Cristiano Ronaldo. I don't expect the two of them to be sitting on the bench for weeks and months to come. But I think Maguire is in a difficult position, because on paper, Rafa Varane and Lisandro Martinez are a better partnership together. I think they kind of pair off quite well. Rafa Varane is always the asterisk next to his name of when he's fit, he is a better player than Harry Maguire. And Lisandro Martinez, for all this talk of how tall he is he going to struggle in the Premier League, I think he's answered pretty much all of those questions. Again, there's still a little bit of road to run on that. So Harry Maguire, he's the club captain of Manchester United, and you look at it and in theory you'd say it's only a matter of time before he comes back into the team. But part of Erik ten Hag's mantra at United has been, it doesn't matter who you are or what your rank or role in this squad is, I make the decisions, I pick the team. And at the moment, Harry Maguire is not in the reckoning for that, and deservedly so, both based on his form and Varane and Martinez's form. I don't think he'll play this weekend, and he does have a battle on his hands to get back into the team. Sometimes these things can happen when there's an injury or when one of the other two maybe has a bit of a drop off, but he'll be looking further down the line, the World Cup in November. if he's not starting regularly for Manchester United, will he keep his place for England? I think it's a really important few weeks and months coming up for him. But as it stands, he doesn't deserve his place, certainly not as a starter for Manchester United.
Arsenal is going to be an interesting test. Actually, for both teams, it's going to be quite an interesting one. And, you know, I said we probably didn't learn a huge amount about Manchester United from last night, but I'd say after the Arsenal game, we will be a lot clearer on where both teams are at.
I think what we've learned with Man United in the last couple of games, Marie, because the performances have been average enough, particularly the Southampton one, but I think what we've learned is there are games that they would have lost last year, 100%. So there's a bit of resilience about the team now, which maybe wasn't there. But I think, as you say, the fact that they're playing Arsenal on Sunday and the form Arsenal have been in, I think Arsenal, I said it here a couple of weeks ago, I think there have been the story of the season. Arteta, I go back to the Aubameyang thing, he's made really good signings with Zinchenko, and Jesus coming in, obviously hitting the ground running as well. And I think, again, you look at that team, I know there's a couple of injuries at the moment in the midfield area and he's worried about, but again, they've had consistency in the team selection as well. It's so important, Marie. If you know your best 11 and you're getting 8 or 9 of them on the pitch every week, it makes such a difference. And I think that's what Arteta has nailed down as well, hence the positive start. So I think they go into the game as favourites, Arsenal, off the back of the start that they've had so far in the campaign. And I think the question is, can they maintain it and can they sustain, I suppose, that level of form? They're obviously not going to remain unbeaten, but if they can keep it going for another few weeks and keep themselves in that top four, I think that'll be an achievement for them this year to get into the top four places. They're not going to win the league by any means, but they're certainly on the right road, and Arteta, I think, deserves a lot of credit.
The Arsenal fans are quite funny because there seems to be two type. One that is just enjoying every single minute of being on top and things going really well. And then the other type who is like totally apprehensive, waiting for it to fall apart, can't enjoy it because they're so anxious. So it's quite entertaining to see them be where they are. Look, it is very early, and who knows what is going to happen over the next few weeks. Just before we move on, and I mentioned Manchester United and their game against Leicester last night, Fergal, how long do you think we will see Brendan Rodgers in that Leicester job?
Not long. He's clearly very annoyed. He's being very, very straight in his post-match press conferences and any conversations he's having with media and journalists that are asking him questions. He's giving them straight answers, which is rare for a Premier League manager. I think a combination of he's run his road at the club and maybe a little bit frustrated with him and how outspoken he's been. It's a difficult situation because Leicester, he's admitted, are punching above their weight over the last few seasons on the back of winning the Premier League title. That probably wasn't sustainable for them to be a top four side, and he's unfortunately now kind of in charge of a declining team in terms of its age and in terms of its level. I think it's more likely that he's given the option to walk rather than being pushed. I think he's probably earned that right, but I would say we're looking at weeks rather than months, potentially the other side of the international break, because he's had enough. And whether you believe his version or whether you believe the club's version, it clearly can't really go on much longer. I don't think Leicester are in any massive danger of going down personally, but I think something needs to give, and it probably is going to be Brendan Rodgers.
He's on him and Leicester on a collision course with Aston Villa. I think it's next weekend they're playing each other, and that could be an interesting one just in terms of managers and who survives after the 10th of September. Aston Villa have Manchester City this weekend. I was watching Steven Gerrard in his press conferences today on Sky Sports, and, you know, just asked about the task that's in hand and how he feels about going up against somebody like Pep, and you couldn't but feel a little bit sorry for him. Maybe it's his demeanour, but, you know, he just always looks like he has the weight of the world, or this instance, the weight of Manchester City on his shoulders.
Yeah, I think he carries that around. He was something similar when he was a player, Gerrard, you know, to be fair to him. So I think that may be just his demeanour in public, to be fair to him, Marie. And he obviously puts a lot of pressure on himself, he would seem, both as a player and as a manager. And he carries that weight of expectation of, he was obviously the superstar player, and he probably feels the same as the manager. But he's a long way to go before he becomes the superstar manager, Marie, and he's struggling at the moment. But I think people are too quick to jump on the back of giving him stick and all sorts. I think he did a really good job at Rangers. You could question. I think there was too much talk when he came down to Villa of the fact that, oh, he'll come to Villa and he'll walk into maybe Klopp's shoes when Klopp moves on. I never felt that was going to happen, or I never felt that was the plan. He has to prove himself at Premier League level as well, because it doesn't matter how good of a player you were, Marie, you're only remembered now as the manager. He's not remembered as Steven Gerrard, the player. So I think he still has a long way to go in that regard, like Lampard. But I mentioned it here a couple of weeks ago, there are young managers as well. They have to be given time and given a chance. I think he's only in that Villa job since November, is it, last year? So he's not long in the job as well. You have to give him a chance. I know they've spent a lot of money, but let him put put a stamp on things and we see maybe up to Christmas or after Christmas, but I don't think I don't think you can be making judgments on him the way they're harshly making him at the moment.
Fergal, I think fantasy football players are feel like they're playing a bit of a game of chicken with Pep Guardiola, wondering when he's going to not start Haaland. I thought it was going to be the Nottingham Forest game. He did say that he's not going to start every game, but why wouldn't you start him in every game when he's playing the way he is?
Exactly, he's on absolute fire, and I think you're right, fantasy football managers, when you're picking your team this weekend, you'll be listening to Guardiola's press conference, and his form's been absolutely incredible. He's not obviously superhuman, even though he's doing his best to look superhuman, and there will be a point where he'll be rested. Don't forget, obviously, the World Cup, he'll be having a little break there himself, but I just don't see a position, unless it's a League Cup game or maybe even the early rounds of the FA Cup when that kicks in the new year, that he'll get rested. I would say between now and the World Cup, unless he's injured or unless there's a major change, I think he'll start every Premier League game, and he's just been incredible. I think the goal records that are potentially being knocked down by him will just keep getting knocked down. He's been fantastic. He's crucial to what Pep Guardiola's doing, and we've seen a rarity in Pep Guardiola that he's changed the way Manchester City play effectively to accommodate one player. There's been interviews with Rodri and Yao Cancelo this week saying that we've all had to kind of rejig for this guy, but because he's scoring these goals and winning these games, for now we're absolutely fine with it. And I just think he's undroppable at the moment. I think unless he gets an injury, I don't see him being left out. So if he's in your fantasy team, keep him in your fantasy team.
What a selection headache to have. Speaking of selection headaches, Al, if you're Jurgen Klopp, are you putting in Darwin Nunez?
Yeah, I think so. He's fresh, obviously, because of his own stupidity. But I think the amount of games, obviously, that's come taken fast so far. And Firmino's done well in a couple of games as well. Mm. A lot of people knock Firmino, but I think Firmino's a great player and very important to Liverpool. Maybe they just look at his goal record, but he's been very good in the last couple of games. But I think with Nunez, because he got off to that kind of a good start when he came on, obviously, in the Charity Shield and got the goals, and then you look at him getting sent off so stupidly, but he'll have to learn from that, and I think he will, and he'll understand now, obviously, because I don't think Klopp was one bit pleased. But I think he should start him tomorrow and freshen up the team, because there's been a lot of games, and it'll be interesting to see what he was, because he's so important for them now, Nunez. You know, you're looking to him to maybe score the goals. I think Luis has probably been their best player so far. Salah hasn't. Obviously, it's crazy to think the 1-9-0 and he didn't score a goal. So he's yet to get himself up and running at full pace. But I think Luis Diaz, he's been their best player. But I think with Nunez, because there's been so much money paid and the expectation, I think they have to get him into the team now, and I think he will start him over the weekend.
Fergal, he seems a little bit like, I don't know, a little bit of a loose cannon. Like, was he one of the people stuck in the middle of that little bit of a row at the end of the Newcastle game?
He was, yeah. He was shouting over the top of Klopp, and you might look at that and say, has he learnt any lessons from his red card against Crystal Palace? Liverpool fans will be hoping he will, and throwing him into a derby at Goodison Park is probably a good measurement of, is he a loose cannon constantly, or is this just a one-off? He needs to prove something to the Liverpool fans, because a lot of them are very annoyed with the situation. It was a stupid red card to get at a point where Liverpool are not enjoying their best moment. I think he will come back into the team tomorrow, but He needs to get a goal. If he gets a goal tomorrow, if he gets a winner at Goodison Park, immediately that'll get him back in favour with the Liverpool fans. But he needs to start getting some motor into him, because he's missed three games because of this suspension. Inevitably, he's going to be compared with Haaland, which is a bit unfair. I think Haaland is already on a different plane to him and most other Premier League strikers. But Liverpool need him. They need him to start scoring goals. They need something to kind of zap their season into life. Yes, they've just won 9-0, but it was all very scrappy and scruffy against Newcastle the other night. They're not the Liverpool that we're used to seeing. You feel like they need something to click back into gear to really chase Manchester City down, and he could be a big part of that if he stays on the pitch for 90 minutes.
I think Liverpool's biggest concerns is the midfield area, Marie, because the lack of creativity in there. But there's two players, and obviously Harvey,
you're nearly as old as yourself.
Harvey Elliott has made a brilliant start to the season. I'm a big fan of him. He's going to be a massive player for them. I also think, and not just because he scored during the week, but Carvalho is a serious talent, and I think you're looking at the future there, and I wouldn't be surprised if he plays those two in the game tomorrow as well, with maybe the likes of Fabinho in the centre and those two off him, and Henderson
and
gets
exciting.
Left out. Yeah, because I think Henderson, for all his good work, and I know he gets a lot of stick, I like Henderson, but his best days are behind him, I think.
Okay, Fergal, we are going to leave it there because we still have a lot to get through. It is a weekend of derbies, though. Celtic and Rangers is on tomorrow as well. And then tonight we have Shamrock Rovers and Bowes, Alan Colley.
And I'm going straight to Dalymount now, Marie. I'm looking forward to it.
Lucky ones getting the tickets.
Managerless Bowes, yeah. So it'll be interesting to see, obviously, the response from Keith Long's departure. I think Derek Pender is taking charge of the team tonight. Shamrock Rovers, who are obviously going from strength to strength. Your team, Marie.
My children's team.
And these games haven't disappointed her. They never seem to let us down in the last two or three years. They're absolutely brilliant, the Dublin Derby. So I'm really looking forward to it. But I'm more interested just to see the reaction of Bohemians, because that's a huge job. And you look at, I suppose, the vacancy that's there now for somebody to come in. I think even for someone across the water, that's going to be a massive, massive job and a massive appointment for Bohemians to get it correct, because they've so much good going on off the pitch in terms of the resources and how stable the club is for probably the first time in a long, long time. They've money behind them as well, and you would look at obviously the ground getting redeveloped. Mm-hmm. So that's a massive opportunity for whoever's going to take over, and I hope to get the appointment right.
Yeah, Jim Crawford was somebody that was linked with it today, and obviously he's very well got here in Ireland from an international and a domestic level.
Yeah, and if you're looking, I suppose, in Ireland, there's not too many options, to be honest with you, Marie, because obviously the two or three managers who are up near the top are all in secure jobs, in the sense with Stephen Bradley or Rory Higgins, Tim Clancy, Stephen O'Donnell. So none of them are going to leave their jobs. If you look below where Bohemians are, the likes of Kevin Doherty's doing a brilliant job at Drogheda United. He'd be one I'd be certainly interested in if Bohemians were looking. But as you say, Jim, who's involved with the under-21s, he's in a really good role there with them. They have the playoff game coming up, but his contract situation is up in the air, so I think it's up to the FEI to nail Jim down and commit to him if they're going to commit to him, but do it now. Whereas if that doesn't happen, I'm sure he'll be of interest to Bohemians as well. And then if they look outside of Ireland, as I say, there'd be so much interest in that, because it's a massive job.
Yeah, it is. It's such a big club. Dundalk and Shelburne is on tonight as well, 7:45 live on RTE2. It feels like when it comes to the top anyway,
I don't know.
Tell me.
Well, I think if Bohemians were to get a result tonight and Dundalk win, all of a sudden they close
it's
the gap
on.
Again. Well, yeah, and I know but I just think with Shamrock Rovers' schedule coming up as well, and this is what Stephen O'Donnell and Rory Higgins should be looking towards, is win as many games as they can between now and the end of the season and see where it takes them, because it will be difficult, Marie. Even though they have a great squad, Shamrock Rovers, it will be difficult going, obviously, Thursday, Sunday, Thursday, whatever the amount of games that are coming, and they're still in the cup as well. So it's a difficult schedule, and that should give the likes of Stephen O'Donnell and Higgins and all their players hope.
Okay, Alan, thank you so much. We're going to take a very quick break now, but do stay with us. Jane Mangan and Gary Cowell will be on to talk about tennis and horse racing.
RTE 2FM. Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On with me, Marie Crowe. It's now time to turn our attention to the US Open, and Gary Cowell is with us now to look ahead to the weekend's action. Gary, thanks so much for joining us. Should we expect it to be the Serena Williams show?
Yeah, well, it's looking like it. I mean, who would have thought that Serena at 40 would still be competing in Grand Slams like this? She played her first Grand Slam in 1995. Realistically coming into it, and when you look at last week, she lost in the first round in Cincinnati last week easily to Raducanu. We wouldn't have thought she'd be where she is now, having beaten the number two seed. So people are starting to get excited about it. Yeah, but it's the Serena show, I suppose.
Yeah, and I guess at this stage of her career and the fact that she is finishing up, it is nice to see her still be in it. The doubles would have been disappointing for herself and Venus not to progress, but you know, if she got one fairy tale, you'd think she'd be pretty happy.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, between the two of them, they have 30 Grand Slams at the moment, so that they're not doing too bad. Serena is trying to, obviously, match Margaret Court's 24 Grand Slams, so if she did manage to pull it off, it would mean that she's equally the most Grand Slams of all time. So there's a lot to play for.
Yeah, there really is. And what about on the men's side? What's coming up this weekend?
Well, I think a good story in the men's side is the return of Andy Murray. Andy had a really good win in the first round, beating the Argentinian seed. So he's in the third round today, playing against Berrettini. He's not doing too well at the moment. He's a set down. But to see him back after all the injuries and all the troubles, I suppose it's you know, it's really good for tennis that he's returned and he's back with his old coach, Ivan Lendl. Also in the men's side, you're starting to see some of the young guns coming through. There's players like the Italian Sinner and Alcaraz and people like this. So it's actually becoming a little bit more open in the men's side, and especially that Novak is not playing.
Are any of them capable of getting that big win, though?
I think they are, and they're getting closer to it. Alcaraz had a really good run on the clay courts. This is a bit faster surface, so suits the bigger hitting players. But he's certainly one who could cause a big upset, and also the Italian Sinner has everything needed to win a slam, maybe a little bit more maturity. But it also depends on, you know, Rafa and if he can last the 2 weeks. But yeah, I think you will start to see some of these guys coming through sooner rather than later.
Yeah, we'll be saying things like end of an era. I feel like we've been saying that for such a long time, and it hasn't happened. It is going to be an end of the end of the Serena era, though. And if she doesn't manage to have that fairy tale ending, who do you think is most likely to get there?
Well, the favourite really would be Swiatek. But the women's is wide open. Like, nobody's consistently winning slams in the women's. There are some Americans starting to come through. Like, it's a good tournament for American female tennis. There are 8 females still in the draw. And I think there's a couple of dangerous ones. There's a player called Piguala, who actually the family owned the Buffalo Bills NFL team. And she started to do really well in the last 6 months. She's very dangerous. And then you have Danielle Collins, another good American who knocked out Osaka earlier on. So, like, it's open. Any of these players could really do damage. Simona Halep is gone. Of course, she would have been one of the favorites. So it's going to be very interesting to see who pulls through in the ladies. Yeah. I wouldn't put my money on anyone at the moment.
Okay, well, one thing that is for sure, there is another big weekend of tennis to come. Gary, thank you so much for joining us. We are going to take a very quick break, but do stay with us because Jane Mangan is waiting to chat. RTE 2FM. Welcome back to Game On. I'm delighted to say that a very patient Jane Mangan is with me on the line. Jane, we got there in the end.
Well, I know my place, Marie. I'm always your curtain closer.
Well, I was going to say, yeah, we saved the best for last. That's the way it is when it comes to you anyway, for sure, Jane. So tell us, what is coming up over the weekend?
Well, this weekend in Ireland is a little bit of a quiet weekend, something of a calm before the storm. Yes, there's domestic action at Wexford and Navan tomorrow, but we have a blank day on Sunday, which gives us a little bit of a time to digest what might come in the weekend ahead, because, of course, Irish Champions Weekend is the 10th and the 11th. That is Leopardstown and the Curragh. And with the Irish Champions Stakes and the Matron Stakes at Leopardstown shaping up to be vintage renewals of their own merit, and of course the National Stakes, the St. Ledger and the Moigler Stakes occur on Sunday. So when you think you've got Vedeni and Onesto coming from France, you have Aidan O'Brien with Luxembourg, Paddy Toomey's La Petite Coco, John Gosden sending over Mishriff, that is a really top class renewal of the Irish Champions Stakes. And of course, when you take in the Matron, hopefully we'll have Homeless Song take on Saffron Beach, Tenebrism, Prosperous Voyage and many more. So there are two top-notch races. A bit of news that broke today is that Charlie Appleby and Team Godolkin will not be represented at Irish Champions Weekend. They're not running Native Trail. They're not running Noble Style in the National Stakes, which probably leaves it open for Aidan O'Brien to have a bit of a stranglehold on the two juvenile races. The Blackbeard, August Rodan, Ace of Fables, all naturally top of the market for the National Stakes because Noble Style came out, and the Moigler Stakes, Meditate is going to be very hard to beat. But Dermot Well has got Tahira, Paddy Toomey has Easy, and but Aspen Grove, after winning impressively last weekend for Fozzy Stack, maybe they'll have their say on matters.
Oh, Jane, you're really selling that now. I'd say if I've got no plans, I might even head down to Champions Weekend.
I'm doing my best to get to there. You know, if you come to Champions Weekend, not only will you meet Christoph Soumian, John Gosden, Aidan O'Brien, but you might actually bump into our very own Marie Croft.
Might actually get to see yourself and Ruby in person. It's been so long. Ruby is on Monday and Tuesday, and we will be building up to the Champions Weekend as well on those days, because as Jane said, there is a lot to look forward to. So Jane, very quickly, what is actually happening in this weekend? What can we look forward to? Maybe Europe?
Yeah, there's three Group 1s across Europe this weekend. In Haydock tomorrow, you've 17 declared for the Sprint Cup. Minzal native Naval Crown Art Power. The sole Irish representative is Fozzie Stacks, Castle Star, but he will need a little bit of rain to be seen to best effect. France, Prix de Moulin, Aidan O'Brien sends over Order of Australia, who was second in the race last year, to Baïd. He won't have to beat Baïd, but he's going to have to beat Lucille, Mongoustine, Lucille, and Dreamloper. And of course, on Sunday, Frankie Dettori rides last year's Prix de l'Arc de Triomphe winner Corto Tasso, takes on the German Derby winner Samarco in the Grosser Prix von Baden. That is at Baden-Baden on Sunday. So yes, it's Germany, it's France, it's the UK, but us here in Ireland, we're going to take a breath, right? Because next week is going to be big.
Okay, we're saving ourselves. I like that, Jane. As always, thank you so much for joining us on this Friday evening. It is all we have time for, it though. We got through plenty there, and a busy weekend of sport to come. The official chart show is up next.